This is your brain on risk. This is Mind Over Money, the podcast where Kevin Cook exposes the psychology of investing.
Welcome back to Mind Over Money. I'm Kevin Cook, your field guide and storyteller for the fascinating arena of behavioral economics. If you're new to the podcast, I invite you to check out recent episodes like Train Your Brain for Better Trading, where I spoke with neuroeconomics expert Denise Schull of the Rethink Group, and last week's topic about how big economic shifts challenge your decision-making. I went through a breakdown of several important cognitive biases, and I also shared one of the classic behavioral tests that Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky used in their research on human decision-making. That little experiment and hundreds of similar repeatable challenges all point to one stunning conclusion. People are naturally irrational when it comes to money, risk, and uncertainty. You can find that test in a written form on a recent blog post at Medium.com titled Mental Models of Financial Sabotage. Just look me up on Medium under Kevin Brent Cook. I started using my middle name or initial a while back after I found out there are like 1,000 Kevin Cooks in the U.S. You can also find these links by following me on Twitter, at Kevin B. Cook. And after each episode, I write a short article with more insight and resources on Zacks.com. That's Zacks.com. Home of Zacks Investment Research, where we combat our own cognitive biases every day by starting with an objective fundamental model, the Zacks Rank. And it organizes a universe of over 4,000 stocks for us based on the relative strength of their earnings momentum. The Zacks Rank is our core quantitative screen to evaluate and compare stocks. But after the model organizes that universe for us, then we can start applying other filters like sales growth, valuation, and even how the chart looks. Speaking of charts, my guest today is a veteran professional trader who has made his living for over a decade off of technical analysis, that redheaded stepchild of finance. He's going to share some of his methods and secrets to navigating markets in a world where the algorithms seem to have taken over and taken away the edge that independent traders used to cultivate. Before we meet our guest, I want to talk about one of those giant algo shops, Renaissance Technologies. Longtime followers of mine know that I spend time every quarter going over the holdings of Renaissance because they were one of the early quant houses that made algo trading so successful and popular. The founder, Jim Simons, was a mathematics professor in the 1970s who never thought about the markets much. He sort of stumbled into testing some theories on stocks, and the rest is history as he was pulled headlong into the markets and created a powerhouse with over $50 billion in assets under management. And Simons made a point of not hiring MBAs, traders, or anyone with a background in finance. He only wanted physicists, engineers, and other quantitative problem solvers to come work for him and mine the data of markets to find unique correlations, patterns, and new edges. Fundamentals, technicals, weather, consumer spending patterns, and hundreds of small anomalies between individual stocks and industries and versus other asset classes. If it's a popular, well-known correlation, they don't want anything to do with it. They hunt in the noise of tons of data. And this week, Matt Levine at Bloomberg wrote about Renaissance Technologies and explained this very well. Let me read a little bit of his piece. The big problem with Renaissance Technologies is that its medallion fund makes too much money. Simons determined almost from the beginning that the fund's overall size can affect performance. Too much money destroys returns. Renaissance currently caps Medallion's assets between $9 billion and $10 billion, about twice what it was a decade ago, and profits get distributed every 6 months. I mean, if they didn't do this, if they didn't keep handing money back, they'd have produced about $55 billion in profit over the last 28 years, so they'd just keep compounding that. It would be too big to trade. Renaissance co-head Peter Brown says this, "It turns out that when it's cloudy in Paris, the French market is less likely to go up than when it's sunny in Paris." It wasn't a big moneymaker, though, because it was true only slightly more than 50% of the time. The point is that if there were signals that made a lot of sense, that were very strong, they would have long ago been traded out. What we do is look for lots and lots, and we have, I don't know, like 90 PhDs in math and physics who just sit there looking for these signals all day long. We have 10,000 processors in there that are constantly grinding away looking for signals. Well, there you have it. Signals that made a lot of sense and were very strong are what Renaissance Technologies is not looking for. Investing wisdom that you can sum up in a sentence or a paragraph or a book or a human lifetime of learning and understanding, that's not for them. What they want are signals that don't make much sense, that aren't very strong, that you can't grasp intuitively, and then they go out and implement them. They want stuff that looks like noise, but that in the hands of a powerful enough computer with cheap enough implementation costs can make a little bit of money over and over again. To read the full piece, find Matt Levine on Bloomberg View and follow him on Twitter at @Matt_Levine. Now, those last two sentences, I think, need some clarification. In the hands of a powerful enough computer with cheap implementation costs, they can make a little bit of money over and over again. What most people miss about the success of the algos and black box trading systems is that they run through markets with big size in thousands of stocks and instruments because the risk control is automated too. It's not like you or I trading 10 or 20 stocks at once and going crazy trying to keep track of the risk and the profits. They program the computer models to seek and destroy profit opportunities and to manage the risks in real time too, so that they are never destroyed. So speed and continuous instant access make the difference too, especially if the model is wrong about an opportunity. In that way, they take human emotion completely out of the high-speed decision-making equation. With that, I want to introduce you to our guest today, who is like a David to the Goliath of Renaissance Technologies. Jeremy Mullen is a colleague of mine at Zacks Investment Research, where he starts with a simple quant model built on earnings momentum, the Zacks rank, and then overlays his own suite of technical trading filters and what I will broadly call behavioral analysis, because he pays attention to the extreme moves in stocks that are often driven by algo trading that's exploiting investor fear and greed in the markets. And this sets up new opportunities for him. I'll be back with Jeremy faster than you can spell stochastics. Jeremy Mullen has spent the last 13 years as an equity, futures, and options trader. His main focus when trading stocks is high beta equities and earnings moves. He uses several technical tools when entering and exiting trading setups, but also watches order flow to get a feel for market direction. Mullen runs a trading service at Zacks called Counterstrike. Jeremy, thanks for stopping by the Mind Over Money podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. There are two worlds in finance that I have always tried to bring together: technical analysis and behavioral economics. The reason is that chart watchers like you and I believe the price chart tells you about the psychology of the market. So not just supply and demand situations or trends, but also the fear and greed that jumps out at us. So tell me, what are some of the major tools you use and what kind of setups are your favorite?
I use some of the tools that a lot of people use. There's thousands out there that you can use in technical analysis. A lot of people like to make it overly complicated and just confuse themselves, and they end up not being able to decipher where to get in and where to get out. You know, moving averages are very important. It's important to use 50 and 200 a day and know where those levels are. Some people use those shorter term 5 or 10 to get just price direction. But I really like to use, especially intraday, VWAP, volume weighted average price, as kind of a barrier of where to get in and out and where to kind of see if the trend is going to continue. With that, I also like using Fibonacci's. I talk a lot about those all around the office. And when those two kind of line up together, is really a kind of like a 1-2 punch for me, where that's where I want to get in. If that VWAP is holding, which is volume weighted average price, and the Fibonacci level is holding, which is halfway back, I want to get into that stock or that futures contract and look for, you know, the continuation of that trend to keep going.
So you're saying that you can sometimes just use two tools,
yep,
to make a trading decision, and you've been doing this for over a decade.
Yeah.
People do use too many.
Yeah,
tools.
Definitely. Fibonacci is a newer, I haven't used it my whole career, probably last 6 years. And I found it with how many algo traders there are right now, that these guys use it too. And that's why it works. They're using the risk reward that Fibonacci allows to move markets. And I want to be a part of that. I'm just kind of hopping up on the roller coaster with them. And, you know, it can turn out to be really profitable.
Yeah, it's not like there's this magical mystery code in the markets that obeys Fibonacci. It's just that enough people are using it that it consistently works, right?
Well, I think what's great for the HFTs, why they use it, is because they can really define their risk and reward. And that's what every trader wants to do. And if you're disciplined and you stick to that definition, then over time, if you're right more than wrong, you're going to make money.
I want to go back to one of your tools. You said VWAP, volume weighted average price. What are the settings for that?
Well, you can kind of set that however you want, like whatever time frame you want. Typically, since I'm trading intraday, I look at the intraday VWAP, okay? So if I'm trading a stock and there's like an earnings report, let's say PANW came out and...
That's Palo Alto Networks, right?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. And it's down 10% and it starts to bounce. Well, usually there will be like a VWAP, a volume weighted, so the average price paid for that trading day. And let's say Palo Alto wants to rally to that level, I want to look to short there because the trend is down and I want to stick with, you know, okay, everybody who bought that day is going to be selling in this area because that's their average price, right? So they want to, you know, if they're nervous about their position, they want to get out at break even. So there's going to be some supply there. So I want to get short with not only that supply, but new shorts who are seeing the same thing I am.
So that's how you use the VWAP intraday. Can you also use it over longer periods of time in swing trading?
Yeah. So there's, you know, 2 5-day. You can use a year VWAP. I don't tend to do that, but you can go back and look at the SPY and see the volume 8-weighted average price. And if, you know, if that were to break, I might look for an opportunity to, if I'm long stocks, to get out or maybe actually short SPY.
Yeah. In your trading service, Counter-Strike, you're looking more at multi-day or swing trades. So
right.
That's where that would come in. And you can also use the Fibonacci's there too, right?
Right. I'll also use, I tend to target earnings moves. So if there's an earnings move the next couple of days, I'm watching that VWAP. I'm watching if there's any Fib levels. And I kind of want to see, okay, this is a good area of entry. And I know I can actually define my risk with like the 61.8% on the Fibonacci.
Uh-huh. If you don't know about Fibonacci, these are mathematical retracements. So, you know, the market pulls back 50% and 618% is part of the Fibonacci ratio. So
right.
You can Google that and learn more about it.
And not only that, like I use the -23.6 as a target. So I'm actually have a target as well as my defined risk as well. So you always know your risk reward with Fibonacci. I know it doesn't, you know, I said keep it simple and that sounds complicated, mm-hmm. but in reality, it's very easy. You can set up any trading platform has these Fibonacci analysis and you can utilize this very easily.
Yeah, so we'll come back to risk reward because my sense is over 20 years of technical trading that there are a lot of different things you can use that will, and different things work for different people in different time frames. And sometimes it just comes down to how well you manage the risk and the reward. I want to ask you, how often do you have a strong sense that what you're doing is the opposite of what the crowd is doing, that you're somehow taking advantage of emotional extremes in the market?
You know, I always consider myself kind of a contrarian trader, right? I don't want to be taking the tops of a move and just looking for that extra push, right? I wanted the boat to be too loaded on one side, and I want that boat to start tipping the other way. So that's why, you know, I do take the other side of what would be the easy trade. So here we are, you know, like if a stock is at 100 and everybody's getting long, it's going to break through. Well, normally there's some resistance there before. So I'm going to take that trade, go short against that 100 level and see what happens. And normally more times than not, there's too many people trying to push through there and it works out.
Can you give us some more examples of individual stocks you've traded lately that, you know, popular ones that our viewers might know and how what you did was probably different than what the crowd was doing?
Yeah, Netflix recently, they had some great earnings numbers, and the stock went from 100 to almost 130. And from there, I was like, okay, if this stock comes back, I want to look for a good place to buy. So what I did is I drew up a Fibonacci, I looked at the 50-day, and recently, since after the election, it came down, and it came into a perfect spot where it almost touched a 50-day, got front run, it didn't actually get through there, and my Fibonacci level, it went from 130 to 111, where the 50-day is, and the Fibonacci was at 113 with a 61.8% under 10. Perfect opportunity with targets at 136. This trade is still in play. It's trading around just under 120. So, and I think this continues. We could test that 50-day again, but I think, you know, you have your risk reward right there under 110 for more aggressive long-term people. You have the 200-day at a 100, and I think that would be a perfect place to, you know, long-term, set your stops under there.
Yeah. So using the Zacks quantitative model, you had the fundamentals on your side because they just reported strong earnings
right.
And estimates were being raised. So then you could just focus on the technicals, right?
Yeah, that rank had just ticked up. It was on my watch list, and the rank was at a 3. And I was kind of waiting for the opportunity to buy and the rank to improve. And boom, on the same day, the opportunity came. I was like, whoa, got to get in here.
Yeah, the analysts finally caught up and raised estimates.
Right.
So your methods clearly work for you. Do you have any associates that you've traded with over the years in the trading world who use different methods but are also successful?
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of different ways to trade, right? And working in a trading office for over 10 years and training people and kind of seeing how people found their own ways, I think that's really key. You find what works for you. You can't really copy somebody else's system. You have to use a system that you're comfortable with. And seeing all these people come in and out of the office, probably about 1,000, I saw what worked and what didn't. And for me, I just found this great niche to doing some of these technical tricks that I have. And those are constantly changing, and you constantly have to adjust because the market adjusts, right? So those are changing. But also watching order flow, I think that was always a niche for me, watching it, how a stock is trading, and you begin to recognize patterns, you begin to recognize what's going up and down. Now these computers create a lot of noise, so it's a lot harder than it used to be. But still, you can still get that old trader gut feeling that you had if you've been doing it a while. And watching that order flow, I still feel is very important, now, especially with equities.
Is that on NASDAQ level two? Or?
Yeah, your level two and level threes, you can watch that order flow. It's harder if you don't have that, but it's important. You know, tape reading is, you know, a classic lost art. And there's something to be said about watching the tape, watching the prints, and direction of price after that. And I think it's very important, especially in these dark pool days, watching those prints go off and seeing what the stock is doing afterwards and giving you kind of like a feeling or indication of direction, you know, from there.
Yeah. So I also had the experience as a clerk on the trading floor 20 years ago, and then I got to work on a off-the-floor electronic environment dealing with banks. I got to see a lot of traders come and go, and the new trader failure rate it's like they say that 90% of new small businesses fail. It's even higher for traders.
It is amazing. I mean, I used to tell people who were interested in my job, you know, you might want to stay away because these are the rates. You know, I've seen so many. We had classes coming in where it'd be 20 people, right? And we'd have five of these classes in a quarter, maybe. So that's 100 people. Of those 100, there'd be 20 there. After the first 3 months, after the next 6 months, maybe 10, after a year, three. And I think to make it like 3 years and beyond, one. So you're talking about 3 years and beyond, 1% success rate. And, you know, I've seen a lot of those 1%ers even leave after 5 and 10 years. So yeah, it's definitely not an easy job.
Yeah, the story I always tell on the trading floor was that sometimes you'd see a 20-year veteran would all of a sudden be gone.
Yeah.
And that's because something about their edge changed and they didn't adapt.
Yeah.
And they may have gotten themselves, they may have had some bad habits with risk control and discipline that finally caught up to them. So it sounds like you're saying a similar thing. I say that your brain wasn't made to trade, and so we need to train our brains to trade.
Definitely.
Does it come down to, you know, no matter what system you're using, does it come down to having rules and then the discipline to follow them?
Oh, discipline is huge. You know, there's an old saying in trading that you never made any money until you leave the game. And to make money, you have to be disciplined. You can't be this 20-year vet and just blow out. I mean, if you're a 20-year vet, you're probably pretty disciplined. But you can't just blow out your account and expect to start all over again. You know, discipline is just key. It's the biggest word in trading. You have to honor your stops. If your idea is failing, you have to get out. If your Fibonacci broke or if the VWAP broke, you have to get out and look for the next trade. There's none of this like, you know, okay, it's going to come right back. Just get out. If it comes back, get back in. That's simple.
So it sounds like you're really good at avoiding becoming mentally attached to any stock or position or anything. You're definitely not married to it. It's like, bye.
Right. The stubbornness kills traders. I mean, it really does. And I've seen it kill hundreds.
Yeah.
It's sad, but it's the nature of the game.
Yeah. And we've had a great bull market, but then people see a stock, like a tech stock, a new tech stock, and they fall in love with the story. And then they're buying it all the way down, 25% down, 50% down. And then they don't know what to do.
Right.
So for investors who trade, you know, on a 1 to 3 month basis, which is the way the Zacks Rank works, where is a rough stop loss that you recommend to just say, hey, this isn't working, let's put our money elsewhere?
Well, for Counter-Strike, we kind of have the rule, if it's 10% or more, we're going to get out. So most of my trades that I'm taking, my stops, like the levels that I'm seeing, I don't want to have any more risk than that. There isn't, for me, the general rule is define your stop before you enter the trade and honor it. If that's 10 or 20%, that's what it is. If you're really willing to risk that 20%, then fine.
Yeah.
But just honor that stop. Don't make that 20% loser into a 50%
loser. So there's two key rules you just highlighted. Define your risk before you enter, and then obey the plan you set out.
Because you should. You should be defining your risk because you should also be defining your reward. And if your reward isn't bigger than your risk, are you going to take that trade? Yeah. No.
So you're a skilled day trader. You can do this stuff in micro moves, you know, over a few minutes. And then you can also swing trade over several days and weeks. For somebody who's just getting to learn to use technical tools and trying to develop their own methods, you know, and they don't want to be glued to their screen, where would you suggest they start out?
I was always the guy who had no overnight risk, right? I just wanted to flatten out. I have the ability to make good money each day. So I never wanted to take that overnight risk. Over the years, I've gotten a little better at like letting winners run for a couple days or weeks or even months. But, you know, for now, or, you know, for somebody starting out, I think it's important to really be disciplined if you're taking that overnight risk. I mean, we've seen some of these stocks, you know, they have earnings or something, they're down 10 or 20%. So for somebody who is new, I think, and can't watch their screens, alerts are very common for any platform, and you can have it on your mobile, get an alert. So if you're doing your homework and setting up, you know, your charts, and you see an entry, let's say you want Netflix at 110, you put an alert, you get an alert on your mobile, boom, you buy it. You know, you don't have to watch this all the time.
Yeah. And overall, then, even with swing trading, as long as you keep your average losses smaller than your average wins, that you've got positive expected value over time, and you can make money.
Yes. I mean, swing trading is great. I mean, you're going to make more money swing trading than day trading, essentially, if you're following all your rules. But for a guy like who's really into it and can watch all the time, I think it's really, really good to just, okay, you know, make your 500, 1,000, 2,000, whatever your goal is for the day, and move on. No sense holding overnight and having that overnight risk. But yeah, if you're the swing trading, if you're following your rules, it can be very, very profitable as well.
All right. Jeremy, great discussion here. I'm glad to bring a technical guy in here who's done it successfully, survived the, you know, you've survived.
For now.
You've survived the gauntlet. Yeah, as you say, you're not successful until you leave with the money.
Exactly.
But it sounds like you've learned the essential skills to take you pretty far. Thanks again for coming in.
Thank you.